escrows to fill. They did, when I was with the county here, they did legal work for the districts.
Right.
And so, and when I was in Phoenix, they did an awful lot of work for improvement districts. For me there, we had 30 or 40 improvement districts going at
the same time. They have a division for bond council. They're huge. They cover just about every district.
Yep.
But this is going to be a long meeting. Start at 10:30.
We have three meetings.
Yeah, the regular meeting starts at 10:30.
Well, the regular meeting, the length is really up to you all. We don't have a lot on the agenda, but the time of the exec session is really up to the board.
Whoever wrote that long description of the ASK
project? Dr. Landy.
Wow.
It's shorter than the original. Well, I sent the original version. Dr. Clark and I sent the original version back saying, please condense.
Oh, my God.
He's very detailed.
I read that. I mean, it was a...
I told her you would read it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, we only have your word for it.
I can't repeat every word that was in it, but I read it, and then I reread the whole thing. Jesus.
Good morning, how are you?
Good morning, how are you?
I'm well, and yourself? I'm sending you those texts right now.
Right.
Keep forgetting.
And we do have leftover bottled water from the complication, so until that runs out, we're back on bottled water.
That's good.
Bottled water is good.
You'll join me in the pledge. I pledge
pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And just a reminder to the board that we're in the work session first, and we'll move into the regular.
Let's go to the work session.
There you go. Okay.
Right.
We have two items as usual on the work session today. The first is an update on the construction process for the White Mountain campus and the master planning process. I'll turn it over to Vice President Hill.
Thank you, Mr. President. So, construction at the White Mountain campus. We have concluded our interviews for the construction manager position. We have identified a person. We have made an offer to the person, but the person has not yet signed a written contract. And so our process has been that we don't reveal the name until we have that written contract. He has got over 30 years of his construction experience. He has gone from being a laborer all the way to earning a master's degree, an MBA specifically. He is a certified project manager, and he's coming to us from California. But his roots are in the White Mountains. So he is coming home to the White Mountains after being there for a number of years. And he came from the Round Valley area. And he is planning to start on September the 16th. So we're excited about that. We're happy to have him, and we believe he will hit the ground running. He will be at the White Mountain campus. We are finalizing whether or not he will be in an existing office or if we will bring a trailer on campus, construction trailer, to be put out into the parking lot that we will utilize. And maybe we start him off in one of our vacant offices and then move to the trailer later on, but that's what we're exploring right now. We have also had our first meeting with SPS Plus. The president, myself, and Director Hewish met with Mr. Bob Tian from who is the principal at SPS. And we have evaluated initial understanding of what the project would look like at White Mountain campus. Certainly our desire to move forward. And he's very comfortable and acknowledges the fact that we're at the stage of evaluating the fees. So what he is to come back to us with is some sort of listing of the fees. And we have comparisons to other contracts that are in place with other community colleges. We also have another set of fees that is part of a competitive contract that the state also has. And so we're hoping to have that soon. We'll be able to move forward with SPS Plus. And the way that the statutes are written for purchasing guidelines is that if we, MPC and SPS Plus, do not come to an agreement on these fees, then we would move to the second candidate through the RFQ process. We don't anticipate that that will happen, but that is certainly the process. So, any questions I can answer for you?
Mr. Chairman, go ahead. Vice President, good morning. This is a long drawn out process obtaining the right architect slash developer slash engineer for this job. The fee structure is going to be based upon multi-stages, correct?
Correct.
And the first stage is the master plan for all campi or just for the White Mountain?
We have talked about certainly looking at all of the locations. Probably excluding Apache County, since some of those are leases. And certainly also there's some limited capacity that we can do at White River and Hopi without actually doing something else. So there's going to be different stages, but the focus is going to be first White Mountain campus and then the Winslow campus. And then we'll prioritize the other two. It is SPS's recommendation that we do all of the campus of the master facility planning at once instead of just focusing on two and then picking up the others later. That is the current recommendation, but that also may change.
And so the first fee that they would want to negotiate would be the master planning process?
Yes.
And then once that's adopted, then move on to the actual design of the number one project.
Correct. If we are
any potential for agreeing to do the White Mountain campus, get that done, and then move on to the first building, which we understand. Is that an option that you discussed with them?
We certainly have. We've talked about doing the master facility plan first and then moving on to the skills center and then probably to currently bringing on the educational facility. However, if we're satisfied with the fee structure, either the hourly rate or the project rate, we will continue to move forward with SPS Plus based on what we need and the timing that we establish.
And if I understand your question correctly, Mr. Madison, we did discuss briefly with SPS Plus principal moving ahead with the Skill Center either adjacent to or in advance of the master plan, and they recommended against that. And said they felt very comfortable meeting our timeline to move into the Skill Center if we started a planning process first and then the construction process.
So it would be a stepwise process.
And we were clear on what our time frame is for this process.
Okay. Questions? Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on to the accreditation.
Can you flick to the hall?
Yes, sir. Good morning. Good
morning.
Members of court. Hope you have a good summer.
Moderator, there's actually a PowerPoint here. So
okay, now we have to resume our preparation for the upcoming accreditation. So I have a couple of slides to just kind of do a recap, and we will fly through it very quickly and then get to today's session.
Again, this is our slideshow.
Thank you. So this is kind of like to familiarize ourselves about the major areas that HLC is going to focus on. And we're going to, again, look at the five criteria components. Criteria one is concerning about mission. Two is how well the college is acting with integrity. Three and four is focusing on learning and teaching, especially in criterion four. HLC is going to focus on the assessment activities, how well that the college provides instruction to our students. Criterion 5 has to do with resource planning and to what extent our college is effective in fulfilling its mission. This is another recap. We have gone through it a couple months ago, how the accreditation works. Right now, our college is on HLC's open pathway cycle. It spans for 10 years. So last time when we received a reaffirmation of accreditation status was 2009. And so this year, we kind of like do it again. And throughout that 10 year, every year, the college has to submit what HLC requires as an annual institutional update. And year four, we are supposed to have an assurance review. I graded out because last time we didn't actually go through it. It was because, and President Bessie can kind of chime in, at the time, HLC is changing the way that they review to do the accreditation.
Right. We entered the open pathway as a new model, and we entered the open pathway in year four of this cycle. So all colleges that began in year four were basically had that assurance review waived the first time through the cycle. But we will be responsible in 2023 for this year four review.
Okay. Thank you. And then also, under the open pathway option, the college will require to establish a quality initiative process. It's last from year 5 to year 9. And for us, for MPC, our quality initiative is the proactive advising for student success project. You've already heard about it. And then, of course, right now we are in year 10, comprehensive evaluation. You've already seen this slide before, but I want to kind of like give you an update about where we are at. So we're still at self-study, stage 1. And right now, we are undergoing the final content review in terms of office. The final version of our assurance argument is being reviewed again, but by a different group of people. It's being reviewed by our dean and also director. And after that, in early September, our editing team, composed of 3 English professors, will look at it again. And then hopefully we are targeting at the end of September to lock the assurance argument. We have, the argument is quite long, as you kind of read already, we actually read out the initial draft. Right now it's almost close to 29,000 words. We have about over 400 evidence files, and so our final content review team is working really hard to looking at every single statement, clicking on every single evidence file, and making sure that we are presenting the best as we can to the HLCP team. And then phase two is the peer review, and the peer review team will have access to the argument once when we log that argument into the HLC online system. And they will look at it. They have about, let's say, a month and a half to read through the entire argument with the evidence file, and they will develop an itinerary and then work with us to plan for that visit. And you've also seen this slide before, I think the last time in June. The key review team list, we have 5 HLC3 reviewers coming to visit us. And the end of July, I get a phone call from the chair of the HLC peer review team and have a chat with him and kind of like trying to plan the upcoming visit. And so what I know so far is that they choose to, they're planning to visit 3 campuses, Winslow, Holbrook, and Sherlock. But they also expect a good turnout rate from all the other center and on-campus location to attend any sessions that locate in the area.
I know in the update that we got, they were asking for a multi-campus report or whatever. How, I mean, what was that, and is that a normal part of the process? And I mean, it sounds like we were blindsided by it. And so I'm just curious, is that part of the normal process, and how long does that take, and when will we have our report available for them?
So we are working on that, meaning that you can say that we're blindsided in some ways, because when we approach our HRC liaison and asking any additional information about the multi-campus report, and she was checking and saying that, yeah, indeed it's a normal process for any institution who have more than 4 campus locations. But the way that they define the campus, the branch campuses, is different from the way that we have been defining. So we are sorting out with our HLC liaison about exactly how, what we need to do. Should we file a multi-campus report, or should we change some of the things that in their system so that we can sort it out? Irregardless, they are going to evaluate all our locations. It's just a matter of like to what extent we are preparing a separate report for them to review. So to
Did that answer your question?
Yeah. So what does HLC define as a campus, and how is it? I mean, I understand that part of the center versus an actual campus and the unique layout of MPC, but I'm just curious to know what their definition of.
Their definition in general aligned with a federal level definition of branch campuses. And that's why I kind of remember, and President Betts, if you want to chime in, feel free to do that. The major differences that they want to kind of look into is that each of those campuses that they identify as branch campuses has to have several individual supervisory structure, hiring authority, and things like that. So that was the major thing that I kind of remember, how they define it. And then the exec team and I kind of like discussed about this, that in truth, our college did not have that structure at all. So our, Snowflake campuses not have their own manager, have hiring authority of all the individuals on that campus.
Right. Here's the four bullet points that are really the test that they use to determine if a campus is a branch campus. It is permanent in nature. Yes, that applies to all of our locations. It offers courses and educational programs leading to a degree, certificate, or other recognized educational credentials. Yes. It has its own faculty and administrative or supervisory organization. No. Our campuses have their own faculty. They have their own management organization, but they do not have their own administrative or supervisory organization. And this is the real issue that Director Ibraez and I and the exec staff had. The fourth bullet is it has its own budgetary and hiring authority. And the board does not grant our campuses independent budgetary and hiring authority. Your definition and board policy of a campus is very clear, and our structure as a result of that is a centralized structure with multiple locations. So we have sent an email to the Higher Learning Commission that lays out these bullet points and provides our response to each one of these, and we're waiting for a response from them. Should they still tell us we need to do the report, we've met, we're comfortable that we can complete the report, which is much less narrative and much more just kind of factual and a collection of data.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome. So going back to this pre-review team, we've seen that a lot of the pre-reviewers have an area of expertise of assessment. And so sounds like this is going to be the intense majority of the focus. It looked like it would be in that area. So just kind of giving us a hint about where we should better prepare for the visit. Over the course of the last couple of months, we've kind of like gone through some of these questions in different areas. So for strategic planning, we worked through some of them and, giving you some ideas about what kind of sample HLC question that you need to think about, and maybe going back to your notes and previous years, meeting minutes to kind of like refresh your memory about, well, should I be asked about this? How would I respond? And again, if you have any questions, let us know, and we're happy to help. So there's a couple of questions related to strategic planning. And then fiscal oversight, of course, every month, we see Allison provide information and updates associated with the fiscal and financial status of the college, and go through those. Then we started to kind of like work on some of the questions associated with educational oversight. It is the understanding that the board actually delegates this particular set of responsibility to the college and also the faculty. At the same time, it is also important to know that the board also has a fiduciary responsibility to be informed and to get updates from the college associated with all the educational offerings and the centers and the program. So these are some of the questions.
Chairman, this is a silly question, but The question is, how much time is spent relative during board meetings? During board meetings, do we get any credit for homework?
My not silly response to that is, you will get as much credit with the group as you explain to them what you did. So if you say, look, I've done my homework, I can demonstrate that I have this knowledge because we are provided all of this information and we read it in advance, and you'll get credit.
Because behind these questions,
Paul sends us copious amounts of information, which we then spend long evenings discussing it with my cat. And
can you bring your cat with you?
The sample question, as far as oversight, I don't think that this question really speaks to the amount of time that we all actually put in fulfilling our responsibilities. So while it's a facetious question, I really mean that the 2 or 3 or 4 hours that we spend here on this is a small fraction of the amount of time that we put in this job.
And I think it's perfectly reasonable as board members for you to frame your response that way if you're asked a question that's narrowly focused on a board meeting, because you do a lot more than what takes place in a board meeting.
Well,
in fact, some of the most important work you do is outside the board meeting.
I probably put in, and I'm sure everybody else here puts in, two days of prep work once Paul sends out this enormous document and all of the information. And it's his fault.
Thank you, Paul.
I just want to get credit. That's all. I just want to get credit.
You have it. The vice president kind of like mentioned about is how the board frames the answer to demonstrate what is behind all these questions is what HLC reviewer wants to know: how knowledgeable you are about the aspect of the college operation. So they ask the questions like leading you to kind of like expand on it, and feel free to expand on how much work that you have to look into outside of the normal quote-unquote meeting hours, because they recognize the leadership role of the board to take the college to a different level. The board's role in bringing in outside kind of a source of information, the unique perspective, the guidance that the board has to the college, they want to hear those. And so this area is, along with strategic planning, fiscal oversight, is all about how well does the board know about what the college is doing. So,
I was just curious. So when I went to the HLC conference back in last year, April, I was just curious because I was looking and preparing for the meeting and whatnot, but I came across this multi-sided core components of the HLC, 4B being number one of assessment and improvement, 4A resource-based, 4A quality program quality, 5C planning, and 4C persistence and completion. And I was just curious, I don't know, I'm guessing it may have changed. Okay. Okay, and I was just curious, I mean, like, are we paying special attention to those? Because I, obviously, they put it out there to help schools prepare for a visit, and I was just curious to know if we were heeding that approach as well.
Yeah, this year's annual conference, we received the similar information. Criterion 4, the entire Criterion 4 actually is the top cited.
Okay.
When with our institution having not met or met with concerns. And so this is the area that we want to focus on, because kind of like try to gear up all our efforts to work on. But one thing though, it should be they somehow caught onto it in some ways. Even though when they go to like institution and conduct their comprehensive visit, and they find out that the institution is like starting to plan things and doing that thing, so their focus is not just the last 12 months, the last 2 years, what have you done? Or what you're planning to do? They take a look at a longer time frame, And as much as we can put our efforts to plan, we are thinking that they may have some recommendations for us. And we welcome that because we are an institution that focuses on continuous improvement. In this area, we are hard to work on that. And then later on, you can hear some of the information, the process that has been in place for a while. And also, I think later on in the regular sessions, you will hear an update from Dr. Landy concerning about the assessment of student knowledge activity that the college has done for the past academic year.
Mr. Leslie, to further answer your question, for the last 3 years in a row, I've done a presentation each year after we get back from the meeting, laying out to various groups within the college what those high risk areas are, and we did that for the writing teams as well when they began writing responses.
Because I was just curious, it was interesting to find out that 5A deals a lot with the board lack of, I think the common finding was the board didn't have proper oversight of the finances, and obviously we don't. That doesn't apply to us, but it just caught my attention because there was, when the board came up in those findings, I was like, oh, okay, that's what I need to help pay more attention to. Obviously, the overall accreditation process is important to the school as well.
And that finding, that 5A finding, tends to be with colleges that are in financial trouble. That unresolved financial trouble.
There are some more questions here, kind of like looking at just general information type of thing for the board. We need to know ahead of time to prepare for potential questions from our HSC team. And what is the process of program review and assessment? And how frequently do we just update on those? And I think today we also hear some more updates on a schedule of the program reviews by Lucy Clark. And what are some of the actions the board has taken after receiving the information? So it's kind of like closing the loop. Once when you kind of learn about, okay, the updates are there, then what? It's not just about what activities the college has done in this area, but how well are they doing? I mean, I'm sure that, when you hear from E.P. Ellison, it's like, concerning about our financial status, if you just give one word, this one, very good, or two words, this one, very good, you wouldn't be satisfied. So you will just have some numbers, and you will have some information. And I'm glad to kind of like learn that, at least in spring, the board has requested additional information associated with the cost improvement survey, for the entire college. So it's kind of like balance out really. And then also the board has been paying attention in areas about program review, asking appropriate questions, asking more information on where the data and how well the programs are doing, things like that. So these are the things that keep in mind that it's likely to be information that the HSC the European is going to ask me about. And this is the current program review schedule. The academic program review occurs every 5 years. And so each of the programs, you kind of lay it out across different divisions. You can learn this particular year, you are expected to hear program review summary in what program. So you can kind of keep an update on
that. I have a question. So those individual programs obviously require their own separate accreditation. And obviously that, I would imagine that would be reviewed or at least looked into when the comprehensive visit happens, correct? Okay.
Yeah, for the program review days, the HSC is our institutional level accreditor. They also pay attention to programs where they have program-specific accreditation. So nursing area, they'll look at, and then kind of look at their report, and then to see if we meet the standards. Yeah.
That's actually one of our pieces of evidence, is our program accreditor.
So this slide shows the student learning outcomes. The college focuses a lot on the general education, the value that we provide to our students.
Kim?
And you can see that there are six, in, right now we have six general education outcomes: critical thinking, effective communication, quantitative reasoning, scientific inquiry, information literacy, and diversity. So to an extent as possible, the department and also the program are encouraged to choose any one of these measures in the assessment process. The college also has an annual assessment process that's going on. This is on the instructional side. So starting in October, we started to have a planning date. Each of the departments will do their own assessment of student learning. And then go through the entire academic year at the end in April. Number five, we have a dialogue day. So the whole college come together on the instructional side to discuss about the assessment activities. So this is my last slide. So for today, so next month, we're going to talk more about assessment. I just briefly go over very quickly about it on the instructional side. HLC currently is focusing a lot more on the non-instructional side, the co-curriculum side, to what extent we have we matching the co-curricular activities with our instructional activities. So stay tuned until next month, and we'll learn more about it together. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We need the adoption of the agenda. Do I have a motion?
I have a motion to adopt the agenda
as presented. Second. All in favor, starting on my left?
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries.
Did I miss something? Technically, the work session is a separate meeting.
Ah.
So we may want to adjourn.
Well, I thought we rolled it into this one.
Well, I did too, but I've been informed by the
okay. Right. In that case, well, we did the pledge. Do we have a motion to
come out? Okay,
we're out. Now one more, and we're okay. In.
You have satisfied Paul's requirements.
And we have, so does our motion still count, Paul?
I will just assume that people make the same motion and we can do the vote.
Why don't we do it again?
Yeah. Right. I have motion to adopt the agenda as presented.
Second.
We have motion and second. All in favor, I'm starting on my left.
Aye.
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 Motion carries. And now we have the call to the public. Does anybody want to tell us anything?
Why don't we ever
or call us names? So much for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our first report is the financial position from Vice President Ellison.
Good morning again, and I am sharing with you information on our completed fiscal year. So we do not meet in July, and the information is on a two-month arrears. See, I get a break and I forget how to use this stuff. There we go. So, for the fiscal year, July 1st through June 30th, 2019, this is the cash-based budget. I bring this up again because you will soon be seeing the accrual-based budget and actual in the next couple of months as the audit completes. So, we are showing just one set of those financials. The revenues on a annual basis shows that total revenues collected was 105%. We're slightly higher in the primary tax revenue. And to tie back to what Dr. Reyes was talking about in terms of our budget, although you don't have direct oversight for the day-to-day activities related to the budget, you do see the information on a monthly basis. And the primary tax levy is our largest revenue source that hovers around 40% of our entire budget. And therefore, it is the first line that you see in this financial set. The state appropriations is also the second group that has the highest revenue source for us. And so, again, that is the next highest source. And then, to a lesser extent, the tuition and then the grants and contracts. And so this gives you some sense of where our revenue streams are coming from on a monthly basis. But the primary tax levy, to get back to that, we have received everything that we were anticipating for the fiscal year. But it's slightly higher, and that tends to be taxes that might have been applicable to a prior year coming in. It might be a little bit of prepaid. It is not significant. We do not track on a year-by-year basis. We track total cash coming in and total revenue coming in. We get multiple reports from the county that do break it down for us. So if there's ever a desire to look at that detail, we can certainly share that. We have received all of our state aid for this fiscal year, and we get those in quarterly allotments, generally in the first month of a quarter. Tuition and fees, this again is cash basis, and we have 105%. This also then includes any funds we've received for the fall 2019. So a reminder, this is a cash basis. So if a student registered and paid for classes as soon as registration was open for the fall, those revenues are included in these amounts. And when we get to an accrual basis, we have to take them back out so that we're matching the actual revenues to the proper period. And so that will go down. You will also see some adjustments made in the accrued revenues in the financial statements that are coming for how we recognize revenues as an institution or an educational industry. Expenditures is around 86% of our budget. We continue to have vacancies. And this is a typical trend rate for us at this point. Again, we have not also accrued all of our expenses. Things that we have obligated ourselves to do but had not yet paid as of June 30th. However, if we pay them by July 30th, we do account for them on the accrued financial statements in the current year. The revenues for the unrestricted plant looks like it's 22%, but I'd like to remind the board that we have approximately $8 million of this that we had set aside for the White Mountain construction as its first year, and that first year moved out into the second year. So when you compare it to the budget, it looks really light. But when you take out those exclusions, and we're still a little light. We have postponed some IF activities, and so that will roll into future years as new activities are coming on board. We have on the restricted and auxiliary funds, we have accrued or brought in 72% of revenues. Expenses are fairly close at 69%. This again is a reimbursement base. So we have not received all of our revenues, and we will again accrue those when we see the other audited financial statements later. But all of our expenses should be there. There may be a few things that we still have to account for. Lastly, our auxiliary. We have 70% of revenues, but most of those are, it does include some fund balance, things that we had planned to transfer from the general fund to cover those expenses at the beginning of the year. And so we've used nearly all $300,000 that we had planned to transfer to this group. We had expected sales and services at $300,000, and we came in light, just slightly over 50%. Our expenses are tracking with that 70%, and we will continue to look at those transfers that go into this fund in the future. On a cash basis, We're at $5.5 million, and prior year at this time was just under $5 million. And last is the property tax receipts. This is a chart we look at each month, and you can see the cycle. The current year is the larger purple one, so light coming in the first 2 months. We see the big spike in October. We see the big spike again in April, and then it starts to filter back down. Are there any questions I can answer? Thank you.
Thank you. Our next report is from Director Wilson of MCC Pensions Family.
Thank you, Father. Good morning.
Good morning.
I haven't seen you guys in a couple of months. I missed you. Everybody, good morning. I have good news to report. We are just completing awarding scholarships for the fall semester. We have a few new ones that I'm going to talk about. And to date, since reorganizing MPC Friends and Family in fall of 2014, we have awarded over $177,000 to 249 different students. And our audit is nearly finished. We turned over all of our materials to our auditor the first week in July, and I got notice yesterday that they're wrapping up the financial statements so that I can share those with Maria and Amber and be sure we're all on the same page. We had a disc golf tournament 2 weekends ago that was attended by Mr. Leslie, thank you for being there, and President Best and his wife, and also Vice President Clark and her family. And we raised just short of $4,000, and that was net proceeds that will go this time to veteran scholarships again. Petaluma Petrified is full. We've over-registered and had a few cancellations, so we will be right near 250 riders, so you'll have your work cut out for you, Mr. Madison, when you be there. That's going to take place on Saturday, September 14th, with the pre-ride check-in event right here on the evening of the 13th, right in front of the Learning Center. So I wanted to tell you about a couple of new scholarships that I'm very pleased about. And the first one is that we have awarded the first Claude Enfield Scholarship for Early Childhood Development to Dorothy Fisher. This was a long time coming. Recall that when Claude retired, her friends and family set the scholarship up as an endowment, and we had to build it up to a point where it raised enough revenue to provide a scholarship, and the wonderful grant that she got from the Bloss du Bloss Foundation last year of $25,000 certainly kicked it into that range. So we were able to finalize the details of what she wanted the scholarship winners to look like. And then we put it out kind of on a short window because we wanted to be able to award it for fall. And when I say award it for fall, I really like students to know that they're going to get the money, so we try to do it before the semester starts. And we were able to identify Dorothy Fisher as our first winner. I also had a very pleasant surprise that sort of started last May, and I didn't see you guys in May, so I couldn't tell you about it. But a gentleman contacted me from New Mexico. His name is Dr. Mark Duncan. And he grew up in Taylor, and at the age of 10, his family moved to Farmington, New Mexico, where his father worked in the power plant there. And he's now culminating his final term as mayor of Farmington, New Mexico, and he's moving back to the area to semi-retire. And he and his wife are going to be opening up a couple of assisted living facilities called Beehive Assisted Living Facilities. And they had been very interested in giving scholarships to students in the nursing program. He told me that his wife, Becky, all her life wanted to be a nurse. And then they got married, and then they started a family, and they ended up raising 4 children, 3 of whom were nurses. And at the age of 50, when she was an empty nester, Becky said, "I want to become a nurse." And she went back to school, and with her husband's support, she earned her nursing degree. And through that process, she said, "I saw so many women who struggled, who didn't have the support of a family that I had, and I would like to now pay it forward and help women like that." And so it was kind of a serendipitous time, but not quite. I had just received 17 scholarship applications for the nursing scholarships we offered to MPC friends and family, and recall that there were 5 scholarships. And they were assessed by the review committee, and they were all very worthy, and of course not all of them could be awarded. And there was one that I was really particularly disappointed that it missed the scoring by 1 point. And this was a single mom who's raising 8 children, 5 of whom are hers and 3 of whom are her late sisters. And she's been working for a number of years as a CNA at the Low Colorado Medical Center in Springerville. And she recently was overjoyed to learn that she got accepted into our nursing program. And then, of course, she was also horrified because she's thinking, how am I going to get all of this ancillary stuff that nursing students need, like shoes and scrubs and a stethoscope? She had financial aid, but you can still imagine the struggle. So Mark and Becky wanted to offer 2 $1,000 scholarships. And they said, we'd really kind of like to take part in selecting the winners. So I said, okay, I'm going to take all the sort of personal information out and send you the essays of the students who fit your profile. They wanted to choose a woman kind of later in life going back to school. And we had 6 of those, and I sent them off. And the student was one of the ones they chose. So the really cool thing was, Dr. Duncan came through Snowflake 2 weeks ago to give me the check, and I think to meet me and kick my tires and make sure I was getting used to money wisely. And I said, you know, we could call these women, because I can tell you that what you have done is life-changing for them. These are women who are sitting there 2 weeks, 3 weeks out from classes starting, new nurse orientation, going, how am I going to do this? And he teared up, and he said, I couldn't do that. I'm like the biggest boo-hoo in the world. So he went on to New Mexico, and I called the student. And the student, Doug, wanted to get that scholarship, answered the phone driving home from work. And I said, oh, I don't know, maybe I should call her back. And she said, no, I'll pull over. And I'm glad she did, because she started crying. And she said, I have literally been thinking, what could I do without? What could I wait until this semester to purchase? What could I buy used? And this has just been the answer to a prayer. And I told her about the scholarship, and the really cool thing was she said, they're starting Beehive nursing homes. And I said, yeah, they're actually assisted living facilities. She said, when I became a CNA, I did my clinical at the Beehive in Eager. I didn't even know there was a Beehive in Eager. And she said, my 3rd daughter is starting her CNA program with NAVET this year, and she's going to be doing her proctorate at the Beehive nursing home. And so she wrote this beautiful letter to give to the Duncans that I wanted to share just a little part of it. She said, I'm so honored to have been awarded this gift, and it means so much to know Becky's story of dedication and perseverance and not to give up on who she dreamed of becoming. It's scary when I'm old enough to be everyone's mom in my classes, but what an opportunity it is to live life with no set limitations. And I thought that was so cool because Becky said all the students in her class called her mom, and she got very close to them. So this is just an example. I tell people all the time, scholarships are not just about money. Scholarships change lives. Mm-hmm. And by extension, the Duncans have not only changed this student's life, but by extension, the lives of her children and her peers in the nursing program, and even really her future patients. So I'm really excited about this, and I guess that Dr. Duncan liked us because he wants to come back next year and provide additional $1,000 scholarships to 2 NPC students each spring. So that's going to be a brand new scholarship for us as well. That concludes my report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
How can we ask a question after that?
Oh, no way. I was going to tell you something else. And I should have sent you a picture, but I didn't. You always ask about Dr. Graff. And I got an email from him last weekend, and it was a picture of him writing. So that's the bike that got run over with him, and he just got it repaired. He's not riding it very far. He's having a lot of issues with fatigue. But that was something he really wanted to do. So he was all up in his biking gear with a jersey that Ann helped him design, and he was riding his bike. So. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next report is from the Northland Pioneer College Faculty Association, and President Schachterly is here, I think. Here. Yes.
I'm gonna limp up here. I was fortunate enough to go to Machu Picchu in Peru last week, and I have memory bumps that will last forever and an arthritis flare that will last for much of the semester. Yeah. Okay, So I, of course, we don't meet as a faculty, well, we met yesterday, but as a faculty association committee since May. So I sent out an email to the general faculty asking basically for community service and academic activities they took part in over the summer. And so I stand before you as an English teacher reporting on what we did with our summer vacation. And actually, it's not simply summer vacation. It goes from about mid-March to early fall. And the people who responded to me should not be construed to be the only people who did worthwhile things with their time in the spring through the fall. And any errors in this are solely mine as I try to summarize all the information I was given. So, John White here, our Director of Public Safety Education, told me this was more about his students as well as he and his staff. The NATC Police Academy participated in the 15th annual Arizona Fallen Officers Memorial 5K to support the AZ 100 Club in March, and volunteered at the Darren Reed Memorial Scholarship Fundraiser Dinner in April. And the NAVIT Fire Science class performed monthly community service at the Taylor Snowflake Fire Department. This was during the spring, providing breakfast and lunch to on-duty personnel and assistance around the station, and they'll continue doing that in the fall. And the NATC Police Academy will volunteer at Petals of Petrified. They're going to be all over the place, assisting in setting up, pulling down, traffic and parking control, and helping participants along the course. And Mark, if anything I say needs to any correction, let me know, or addition. Please speak up. Dr. Allison Landy in Early Childhood Development, she's our chair, attended the first Culturally Responsive Practice in Indigenous Early Childhood Education Conference. And at the conference, the principal of, and I'm probably going to mispronounce this, Public School, gave the keynote address, and during that address cited NCC's Early Childhood Department and First Things First Grant as important community partnership. Anne Melinda Webb, our geology faculty, she was so busy this summer. She led an NCC Kids College class titled Paleontology, Dinosaurs, and More. She also led an NCC Learning Adventures excursion to Tonka Natural Bridge, and she participated in intertidal biological research, which has been ongoing since 2013, for the Bamfield Marine Science Center in Vancouver Island, British Columbia, Red Tide, and things like that. Eli Blake, who is math faculty, participated in a session at Pima Community College about standardizing the statewide college mathematics curriculum for non-STEM majors. Stephen Mills, construction faculty, attended OSHA courses at ASU and is now able to deliver OSHA 10 and OSHA 30 classes for our students as well as in the construction industry in our community. He works with White River Apache Behavioral Health and our TANF partners on the White River Integrated Education and Training Program, which has between 15 and 18 students enrolled for this school year, so they bring them fall. And presented along with our CCP program at the White River Annual TANF meeting to promote NBC's GED and construction program. Cynthia Hutton, who is biology faculty on this campus, served as table leader and reader at the AP Biology Reading Program in Kansas City. They just do their reading AP exams and marking them. I myself, I'm English faculty, as I said, served as the literature arts scholarship evaluator for the Davidson Institute for Talent Development, which gives college scholarships to profoundly gifted high school students across the U.S. and all sorts of things, engineering, and but they wouldn't let me hear that. I just did a language. Andrew Hazard, who is our history and geology faculty, in the spring presented at Globalizing the Community College Curriculum Conference at U of A and participated in our
You know, I'm glad you asked that. I know he not only won money, I think he was fourth in his division, but he gave it back.
That's what I wanted to say. He always gives the money back when he evidently didn't win very well.
Pretty
awesome. He gives the money back to NBC. Melody Neeson, faculty in English, was working with others whose names I was like for Mark, madly revising and polishing our HBL.
Dr. Kevin Jones and Ryan Jones, the professor.
Mike Tomlinson, speech and theater faculty, a number of his plays have been and will soon be produced by theater companies across the country.
This summer, his play Just Desserts won the judges' grand prize at the Durango 10-Minute Play Festival, and Thank You for Your Service placed second in the People's Choice Magazine at that festival. Therese Hayes, Nursing Assistant Training and Program Coordinator, attended the Arizona Board of Nursing Assistant Education Coordinators Conference, Educators Conference in May, and brought back many new ideas to improve our nursing assistant program. And also in community service, she assisted Winslow program to burn tattered and torn flags taken down from Winslow Cemetery. And Mazda Lushek. The art faculty attended an artist residency at Red Lodge in Montana with a group of five other ceramic artists, and doing the sort of networking that makes these things so useful, has invited one of the artists to come and present to our students as a visiting artist during next school year, 2021. And she presented a demonstration of her ceramic sculpting techniques at the Kimball Arts Center in Park City, Utah. So that's what we do with our summer vacation. Any questions?
Wow.
Thank you. You have written reports from Human Resources and CASA. Does the board have questions about either of those? And given the timing that classes haven't started yet, we have no report from the Student Government Association. So I hope to have one soon. And Mr. Chair, that's the end of our standing reports.
In that case, we have a consent agenda for the regular board meetings from June, work session from June, executive session meetings from June, and dual enrollment. Does anybody want anything pulled out? Hearing none, Mr. Chairman, I would move approval of the consent agenda as presented, including all four items.
Do we have a second?
Second. Do we have any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have no old business. The first item of new business is the annual assessment of student knowledge report, which relates directly to what Dr. Yabreas was talking with us about regarding accreditation earlier. And Dr. Alton Landy is the chair of the ASK group, so that the assessment of student knowledge will be providing the report.
Good morning. Members of the board, President Beth, Vice President Clark, the owner of Ellison, and members of the audience. You know, I am Allison Landy, and I am currently entering my second term as the chair of the Assessment of Student Knowledge Committee. I have presented you previously with the written report, and if you would like, I'm here to answer any questions you might have. I believe that you're already familiar with the assessment process that we're currently using. The only one is, might be member Elias, and he has a child, but that process continues into the current academic year, and at the same time, as mentioned in the report, we're trying to transition a little bit. We're really looking at that process to make some determinations as to whether or not it meets our needs as a college in terms of assessing student knowledge in the way that we as a collective think we should be doing. And so we are in the process as a committee, in coordination with other committees, the Instructional Council, our Strategic Planning and Accreditation Steering Committee, SPACY. Ah, got it. I think that's the first time I remembered what those letters stood for. So we're working in coordination and with the Office of the Vice President. So we're working in coordination to look at the process, really review it, and understand whether or not we want to make some adjustments. And I anticipate we will, as we have now also come to some consensus around what we as a college would like to look at in terms of institutional level learning outcomes for students, focused in the areas of critical thinking and effective communication. And with that, I'll turn it over for questions.
Mr. Chairman, I read every word.
Sure you did.
I'm absolutely flabbergasted at the level of detail that you go into. Every
I was told it was maybe too long.
Critical thinking. Back in the day, I taught. I taught at the University of Washington. We didn't do things like this.
I'm sure you did. You just weren't realizing.
And the student, you either get it or you don't. If you don't, hit the road, buddy, because there are 35 people going to want the chair that you're sitting in. And, well, I'm sorry if I get a little bit worked up over this, but the level that you, all of you, go to help students go to school, go to college, to get it, to understand critical thinking. Critical thinking in my day was, do you get this? You got an A, you got a B, you got a C. Otherwise, get out of here because there are 35 guys that went through the Korea War that want that chair that you're sitting in. Mm-hmm. We didn't worry about critical thinking. You either passed the test or you didn't. And what you do here is just, it's beyond my belief. I just cannot fathom the level of help that you provide. And going through a process like this, it just blows my mind.
Well, so you're also talking to the chair of the Early Childhood Department who wrote the kindergarten readiness definition for the state of Arizona, which included the ability to self-regulate and use higher order critical thinking skills. So we work on that at the age of 3 and 4, and that's how we get college students who are able to use critical thinking.
I know of your background. I know of your writing skills now, but this still, what you're doing, I mean, the entire process, and every college, every group within NPC goes through this every year.
Yes, sir. And I am proud and honored to serve in this role in supporting and helping to facilitate this process because number one, and I think you've mentioned it in your comments, number one, myself and my colleagues and everyone in this room and everyone in leadership put student success as the number one priority at this college. And that is not me blowing smoke. That is me being here saying, and entering my fourth year, I will be here till I die or retire because students come first, period.
Things have changed a lot. That's why I read this and then I reread it and then I read it to my cat. And this is a very smart cat.
We need a picture of the cat.
Did the cat use his critical thinking skills when he listened?
Well, he's a pretty smart cat. But this blows my mind.
Thank you to all of the people here. Thank you to the college because it's all of us.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But to put it down in writing, and then I know you had to compress it. But
apparently, I didn't compress enough. I'll know next time.
Thank you so much.
Any other questions? I have students waiting for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next report is a quarterly update from the Office of Institutional Effectiveness. We'll hear from Dr. Yabrani again.
Good morning again. Obviously, I cannot come. And President Beth saying that this is a quarterly report, and the first line I hear is saying accomplishments associated with reporting and analytical activities in the last 6 months. But anyway, presented before you is a written report. Last quarter, we did actually quite a bit of external reporting as well as an internal one, besides training and getting the college prepared for the upcoming HLC accreditation visit. Those are the things that me and my analyst are still hiding in the office and crunching data. We just finished our summer 2019 course improvement survey, by the way, and we're busy compiling. having the college level myself. With that, then, are there any other questions? Any questions that I can answer? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Jeremy Razor, who is Director of Enrollment Services and Financial Aid. This is a response to a request from the board for an update on the Financial Aid Office.
Good morning, Chair, members of the board. You have the written report in front of you. The only additional information that I have to share is an update on our numbers. So far for this fall, in the report, I mentioned that we had 196 students awarded for this upcoming fall compared to 200 students that we had awarded before the fall semester started last year. And as of last week, we now have 266 that are awarded Pell. So we are ahead of schedule there, plus whatever we're able to do this week as well, right? So you can see just from those basic numbers that we are ahead of schedule using the new software and some of the processes that we've changed and improved. Any questions from the board? Yeah.
So I'm just curious, with Mr. Joe's departure, what does that look like for your department, and how will students be affected?
Good question. So with Ordell Joe leaving, what his primary functions were was a lot of federal reporting, a lot of compliance checking, things like that. So those responsibilities would fall primarily to myself and Marlita Ballou in the office, which unfortunately just kind of means more hours in the office for the two of us. So until we can find a replacement for him, he has also agreed in the short term to come in once a week to help us. So we have turned around and hired him as a temp, even though he did resign from the full-time position.
And then the other part of that question was, how will students be affected with this departure? I mean, obviously, it means more for everyone else to do, and
right.
At the end of the day, like I said before, financial aid is like one of the most important departments
right.
A student comes into contact with. So how will students be affected, and how are you mitigating any of those potential ramifications of his departure?
You know, I feel like between the work that Marlisa and I are able to put in to cover for Mr. Joe's absence, the impact on students should be minimal. It's hard to say. I mean, financial aid in a lot of ways is kind of like recruiting, where there's just an endless amount of work that can be done. So the only thing is opportunity cost, really, and how, if we're choosing to work on some of his work, well, what are we choosing not to work on instead? And so it's a little hard to speak to direct student impact, but we're doing everything that we can to minimize that, and working as quickly as we can with HR to fill that vacancy.
And I didn't look at the HR reporting, but is it being advertised? And when is it going to close? Okay.
I think the initial closing date was the 16th. So, but looking at the applicants, we didn't have a very strong pool, so we will most likely be continuing that. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Question about the computer programs, Campus Logic. We bought that.
Right.
Good decision. Bad decision.
I think it's a good decision. We're not, at this point, using all of the functionality of it, so I think it will become a better decision once we're able to implement those things. But so far, I mean, I think the results speak for themselves in terms of how we've been able to award students more quickly based on the value of that.
And that was the whole idea, was to speed it up.
Right.
And it is working.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm just curious, what functions aren't you using on that?
Good question. So one of the big ones is the award letter component of Campus Launcher. So what that does is it communicates early with students what their pending awards are. And currently, some of that is being done by our GenzaBar process, although it's not ideal. And so this will help them have one place to go for all of their financial aid information. And so when they log into Campus Logic, they can see not only their financial aid pending award, but their status and if they need to get us more documentation.
I'm just curious why isn't that being used? Because I know I deal with a lot of students who are selected for, among other things, verification. And I always ask them, did your school notify you? And I'm just asking from a scholarship side, as that seems to be pretty important. So why
Absolutely.
Is it being used?
It will be used, I guess is the answer. So we just haven't yet gone live with that feature. We're still testing and working through the through our testing database to make sure that we don't send incorrect information to students and that we're sending complete information to students.
And then along the lines of verification, how are students, obviously email and all of that, but I'm just wondering how else are they notified if they're selected for verification?
So when students go and log in to check their status, they can opt to put their phone number in, and then it will text them their status as well, and it will give them updates. So the financial aid office reviews the documentation and either accepts or rejects it. Then they're notified of the outcomes along the way, and then once everything is complete, then it will tell them that their file has been reviewed. And so that's when they know that they're pretty much done with the process and they're just waiting for disbursement.
Okay. Because I just asked, because it's always, the financial aid is a big bad monster and I was never notified. So I was just making sure.
Yeah. Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll turn the time over to Vice President Clark. We have 4 program reviews today and I think she'll be walking through them sequentially. So.
Good morning, Mr. Board Chair and members of the board. It's a pleasure to be here and to report on our program reviews. I'm just going to walk you through and highlight some things from the reports that are included in your packet. I'm going to start with the automotive technology program. Our program is experiencing an increase in enrollment as well as an increase in completion in our certificates, our credentials, as well as our degrees. We also have some wonderful partnerships. One of the best is probably with our NAVIT program, and we have a lot of high school students participating, and that has greatly contributed to the enrollment numbers in our automotive program. I am most impressed with our participation in our regional and state Skills USA, and I have seen it showcased on our social media outlets as well prior to my arrival here. I think it's important to note that students in this program have placed first, second, and third at State Skills USA in 2016, 2017, 2018, and 2019. And in 2018 and 2019, one student even advanced into the national automotive competition. So I think that's pretty impressive. There are some challenges that are facing the automotive program, and that has to do with space. And those are being addressed with our current proposal and moving project on the White Mountain campus, the building of a skills center. And so the faculty and the dean of the dean of career and technical and the faculty of the automotive are incorporating their needs in the plans moving forward with the construction on the White Mountain campus. Are there any questions on the automotive program review before I move into the nursing? Okay. Looking at the nursing program, our nursing program does serve a wide audience, and it really feeds into our community. We have a very impressive nursing program. The program review for 2018-2019 demonstrates that it is a very stable program, stable in terms of resource allocation as well as program outcomes and enrollment as well. That being said, our enrollment is limited by space, in particularly with our clinicals. There's only a number of seats that are open for clinicals, and our students have to go through that process. To meet the needs of Northeastern Arizona, the nursing program does utilize a selective admissions process, again, kind of keeping it into what we can serve and serve with their accreditation. They accept students that have a certified nursing assistant or CNA or the licensed practitioner practical nursing LPN or a paramedic credential. So those are kind of the criteria for getting in. The program is limited to 50 students annually each fall, and the enrollment typically is between 100 and 110 enrollees. When they did this program review, they came up with a focus for the future, and they have 5 points that they're going to focus moving forward. They want to have a clinical evaluation tool that they revise, where they look specifically at their Nursing 121, Nursing 122, and Nursing 222 courses and continue to evaluate those. They want to look at simulation and have the faculty develop a plan to add simulation exercises in order to demonstrate skills and competencies with case scenarios. And they want to participate in the designs of the Allied Health Building on the White Mountain campus. And then they'll, of course, continue to evaluate the NCLEX intervention plan that was instituted in the spring of 2017 and recently revised in January of 2019. Any questions on the nursing program? Okay, we'll move into the nursing assistant training. Also a very phenomenal program. They are meeting the needs by preparing students for nursing tasks that meet hygiene, safety, comfort, nutrition, exercise, and elimination needs. They believe themselves to have very adequate staffing. They also have phenomenal completion rates. To quote Dean Maggette, it's excellent. Like, they are very, very healthy in this area. But they do struggle in very few students acquiring a certificate of proficiency in the nursing assistant training. Enrollment is also limited here with space and availability of the clinicals. You know, that they're limited to the numbers that they can have. They had a little hiccup in spring of 2017 in regards to our reservation sites. The site suffered from high failure rates, and individual school districts were declining to hire instructors at the site. And so the Arizona Board of Nursing Staff, in collaboration with NPC, had to close down some of those offerings, which then had a negative impact on enrollment numbers. And it also had a negative impact on the diversity numbers of our students as well. Most of the students in the nursing assistant program do complete the required course. According to our dean, retention is most likely a function of the placement requirements for this program. They have testing requirements in reading and math before they can even take the course, so that helps them be more successful in this program. Like the nursing program, they set up goals for improvements and moving forward. They want to work with the Arizona State Board of Nursing to create accounts for LNA licensure. They are working, and I've actually recently just CC'd on some of this communication here, on creating some policies and procedures for fingerprint clearance cards and looking to revise those and keep them in compliance with the Arizona State Board of Nursing. They are going to use Moodle for information sharing to standardize some of their curriculum. They're going to revise their skills checklist. They're also implementing a student self-evaluation narrative for the ASP project that Dr. Landy beautifully compiled that report for you earlier. And then the coordinator participates in monthly state board nursing teleconferences so that they can stay current on what the needs are. Any questions on the nursing assistant? Yes.
As
So when you said that the shutdown of several sites, and you, I forgot the words you used exactly, a high failure rate?
High failure rate, yes.
What exactly, can you elaborate on that? Was it testing? Was it, I mean, I'm curious.
You know, to be honest, I can't elaborate totally on this. I know that it's a course, and it's a course completion, and they weren't completing the course. Now, as far as what requirements within the course, that they weren't meeting the
standards. So was it a Navit program?
As the Vice President for Learning at the time, elaborated a little if you'd like me to. It's actually a Native program. Native is the CTED on the Navajo Nation. And what Native had requested that the college do is offer a CNA course, the single course process by distance education, but using Native distance education network, not the college's network.
Okay.
And what the college, because the college was being pushed by the State Board of Nursing, what we insisted on based on State Board of Nursing requirements is that we have qualified CNA faculty at all of the different sites, because we were just teaching the class remotely and didn't have any direct control over what was taking place at those locations. That never materialized for a number of reasons, primarily financial, I think, for many of those schools. And most likely, as a result of that, we had a high drop rate. We had also a very high percentage of students at many locations who never took the CNA exam. And that was significant, having a significant negative impact on the college's pass rate on the exam. Because of that, the state board directed the college to either have an agreement with Native that met these standards or to stop that agreement with Native. And while we didn't want to stop the agreement, we felt like we had to. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I think.
Yeah. Given the opportunity, we would love to start that process again.
Okay.
But it would have to be on terms that would meet the requirements of the State Nursing Board.
Absolutely.
Thank you, President, for the additional information. Any other questions on that program? Okay. Allied Health, Pharmacy Technician, and Phlebotomy. This is two courses, two programs within the nursing area, but separate and very, they're also very distinct. So we're attempting a new format and moving them together for some common purposes for a program review under Allied Health. The pharmacy technician course prepares pre-licensure students to successfully pass the pharmacy technician certificate, board examination, and the phlebotomy course provides students with theory and practice of phlebotomy and specimen processing with didactic instruction and skills lab component. In the academic year 2014-15, there were 10 students enrolled in the pharmacy technician certification course. And in there, in from fall 2012 to 2017, in the phlebotomy course, there were 55 students on average enrolled. We are seeing that there is some great success in the phlebotomy course and a bit of struggling in the pharmacy technician program. And so we're looking at how to better utilize that program and what we can do in the future with that program. Specifically looking at the pharmacy technician course, they want to continue to ensure that the curriculum is covering the necessary standards. They want to submit a feasibility study to the instructional council to explore whether or not this class maybe is just trying to do too much. Maybe they need to extend it into two separate courses so that we can maybe increase enrollment as well as success with the course. They want to gain assurance from that the Pell Grant will continue to support these students and seek clarification with pharmacy technicians in the areas as to what we should be doing with this course. They want to update the equipment and supplies to enhance the simulative experience, and they want to extend the evaluation to include some more data so that we can further look into what we need with this program, what we need with this course. Looking towards the phlebotomy course, they feel very comfortable with how this one is working and see some opportunities to continue the momentum with this one. They want to again continue to ensure the high standards of the course. They want to continue to use the Pell Grant to offer this course, but also work with the Pell Grant possibly some Perkins and other programs to update some equipment and supplies, and they want to extend the evaluations for data here and figure out what else they can be doing moving forward. The phlebotomy one, they're very confident in the success of this course. That'll look a little bit more at pharmacy tech. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Those are the program reviews we have.
Mr. Chair, if we could, I'd like to move item 7F ahead of item 7E so that we can do things in the proper order.
Sure.
Thank you. Item 7F is a request from the administration to appoint the Vice President for Learning and Student Services Clark to the NACC Board as chair. As the board may remember, since the college took over operation and control of NACC, the district governing board has appointed three college employees nominated by the president to serve as the governing board of NATC, and the vice president for learning and student services has served as the chair. Given that Vice President Clark is now on board, interim Vice President Jackson has resigned as chair. That creates a vacancy, and we would like to fill that vacancy as chair with Vice President Clark. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman. Ricky doesn't want to do this anymore. I thought you just...
The letter was in my hand seconds after.
I will serve in whatever capacity.
Okay. Was that, Mr. Chairman, is a motion in order here? To
anytime you want to make one.
This is an action item.
This is an action item. So I would move that the new chair, Dr. Clark, in replacement of the guy that quit, resigned or something.
I second. We have a motion with a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, starting on my left.
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. We will now hear from Vice President Clark as the newly installed chair of the NATC board on a request to release funds for construction at NATC.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Board Chair and members of the board. We would like to request to release funds not to exceed $250,000 from the $1 million state appropriations related to capital investments at the Northeast Arizona Training Center, NATC. We're setting up this request to move forward with the tiny housing project at NATC, what we are calling phase one in this construction. Preliminary estimates for the construction phase of this project are between $188,000 and $220,000, and we will this release is actually contingent upon us receiving the funds, of course. Included with this request, we have in your packet included the board minutes from the August 6th board meeting of NATC, as well as the SPS Plus Architects Design and Fee Schedule, and an update of the overlay for your review. Any questions?
I have a quick question.
Yes.
It's really broad as far as what it says. Is this for design or for construction?
So the houses have been built, and at this point, too, I'm going to call on...
So this is for a purchase.
Maybe I
can answer most of your questions. at one time, this project had been designed by SPS Plus, and we went ahead, the board for NATC went ahead and got preliminary estimates on the cost for doing the infrastructure for the tiny homes, which came up to $188,000. Of course, NATC did not have enough money to do that. And so, in the meantime, the college was going to go try to get some funding from the state. So we waited for that, and now since we were in that process, and trying to get these tiny houses built or the infrastructure built again, and now that we know that we can move on with some of the larger parts of the project, we had to go back and we saw that some of the original design was not going to fit in with perhaps the addition onto the what they call a dirty classroom. So we went back and talked with the architect on what it cost for them to come back and update the original plans. And so we got that estimate from them and the updated estimate of the cost. And so that's what the request would be for.
Didn't answer my question. Is this for the architect or for the building, the construction?
It's for both. We have to update the plans.
Correct.
The $23,000, which is included in the $250,000.
So are we going to get something later to say who we're going to pick to build it?
Yes.
So yes, nobody's actually going to put a nail in anything till we see that.
We need approval for the funding so we can get the architects on the project to upgrade the plan. They want to send it out for bid. Once we receive those bids, we'll come back to the board and ask for the funding to actually do the construction.
Okay, Derek? Can you elaborate on the part that says that's contingent on, I don't know where that went, but
yeah, the money.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, just want to make sure.
Matter of either, but want me to send them out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I want to ask that question. Make sure. Thank you.
Yes, as you know, we received an appropriation from the state legislature in the upcoming year. We do not have the check yet.
Actually, we do.
Oh, we do now.
So we get the quarterly allocations, and so we have received $250,000.
So we're looking to spend simply the amount for the architect at this point, right?
What we'd like to do is we're requesting funding for the architectural fee and then the construction of the infrastructure for the tiny houses.
Correct. But
we won't award the actual expenditure until you have seen the bids and approved the award.
So why are we doing it all at once rather than two steps? Just because that's really what will happen.
Well, that's a good question. But we'd like to just start with the design and just keep moving.
Well, I agree with you, but I don't want to throw out money and say, find out somebody's sure. Cousin built it.
Okay. No. Is it possible, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Maybe I'm interpreting what you're asking for. Right? Are you asking for the board to approve dedicating $250,000 towards this project?
Correct.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Can I call on Dean Jackson, because he used to be in this seat, so he has a little bit more knowledge, I think, than I do at this moment.
Thank you. And he's serving on the NATC board as well. So, and I think, you know, member UN is, you're correct. And we just wanted to make sure we're informing the board of every bit of the process. So we will come back. And say, but we want to make sure we have $250,000 before to get this started for the infrastructure, because quite frankly, we have tiny houses we need to move, and so they need to be moved to those locations, and so we can build more of them. So this is only phase one, but we need to release that money, and then we'll come back to the board, or the ATC board, we'll come back to.
Now you have me confused again. You're saying you already have the houses built?
Well, as a reminder, the college is building the houses through our construction program.
Okay.
This is site preparation, sewer lines, electrical, water lines, all of that.
So that part won't happen until they come back?
Right. Until you guys come back and ask permission to send the money on that.
Correct. So part of the RFP from the architect, I mean, part of the bid from the architect is to do the RFP for this infrastructure construction. So they are going to put the package together. We'll go out to bid. Our board will have to, the NATC board that you assigned us to, will have to
to approve it and then come to you.
For
because it'll be over, of course, the dollar amount that anyone...
And who gets the bid.
Correct. And so we're going to follow our processes that we have in place for that and have, you know, it's completely the way we do RFPs now is to have the architects of the RFP together. It'll go out to bid for how many days, David, do we normally go?
It usually goes from 4 weeks to 6 weeks.
So 4 to 6 weeks, we'll open those bids. NATC will have be the first one to look at them and to make a recommendation or to say this is the one we want. Then we will again come to the NPC board and say this is the way we'd like to go for the infrastructure. And that's why we're calling it phase one. Because, of course, we have other phases that we're going to have to complete with the funds that were appropriated from the state. We have three tiny houses ready to go that our construction program have been building to meet the outcomes of their courses. And so those will be ready to go. If things go well, then the NATC board will approve a fee to for those tiny houses.
To be used.
Yes.
Yes.
As a revenue generator.
And we were hoping for January, but we'll see how long it takes. That if we can move three houses out there, that would mean six cadets from out of our service areas who would have to drive long distances would be able to live in those tiny houses. So that's our plan.
Okay. You had a question?
Mr. Chair, I'm ready to make a motion.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, before he makes a motion, do we have some clarification?
Yes.
Clarification.
Okay, go ahead.
The clarification is, have you retained SPS to do the design work as you have suggested? I think the answer is no. You have not retained.
No, we have not because we don't have a permit.
Right. So what we're talking about here is two separate actions. The first action is to retain SPS to do the design work.
Correct.
The second is to obligate the $250,000 to fund both SPS's design work and to obligate them for the construction if the design is satisfactory and we can agree upon the award of the bid. The bid to Brand X, who is going to construct the plans as yet undrawn.
So our bidders know that the money is available. When they do the bid that, you know, you have approved up to a certain amount for us to, you know, we have this money available for
you. We want to encumber the money.
Yes. Yes.
But we haven't made a decision as a board on who's going to be the design firm or architect.
No, we have not.
Correct.
So really, you're putting two things before the horse.
Could we break this into the two separate actions
that it should be?
If the board would so desire, you can take whatever action you would like.
Okay. Can we now, Paul? And how much was the suggested contract amount with SPS?
And who else supplied?
Okay. They suggested the amount for revising the original design that SPS already did was approximately $23,000 to $26,000, depending on which engineer they need to finish that. Okay.
One more question.
So it's up to $26,000 for SPS to upgrade their original drawings of the tiny house infrastructure.
But you say the original drawings, did we pick SPS beforehand?
You need to go back a little bit more in history.
That's what I'm asking.
And when the original designs and stuff were being put together for NATC, it belonged to the town of Cleveland.
Okay, so we haven't chosen SPS.
I went to SPS and asked for an update quote because they did the original drawings. And it's always less expensive to go back to the original designer to upgrade their drawings than handing all this information over to a new architect to have them recreate something that's already been created.
Where's SPS from, and who are they?
The NATC board is NATC done and approved this architect firm.
When?
Approximately.
Was this back when Taylor had it? That would have been, what, 3-4 years ago or now?
No, it was, Mark, I'm looking at Mark. Mark would have been the board
chair. Trying to remember, board chair, I believe it was prior to the college taking operation and control of the facility. It may have been just after, but it was using NATC funds, not college funds.
Correct, and that would have been 3-4 years ago,
I believe. 3, but don't quote me on that. I'd have to go back and
look. Well, don't quote me, but that's why I'm saying 3 or 4.
Yeah.
I would just like to add, I think it's really good just to clarify that NATC is a 501c, and they have their own policies and procedures for spending their funds. This is a state appropriations fund that we will
as a public entity.
And for the most part, their policies and procedures mimic ours, and so we will be utilizing the NTC RFP process as we move forward.
So my question is, if we tabled this, how well, I'm just, because I'm so confused right now, and I don't feel comfortable making any vote on it, because I don't.
I hope you don't table this, because, and maybe we can help you to understand. There's two things going on at once. One of them was that this project was designed once, and NATC was trying to make it work so that we'd have a place for the police cadets to stay. The one that we needed to bring from outside of our area, they didn't have a place to stay, so the police departments weren't sending any students. Okay, so the idea was, can we somehow develop a place for these cadets to live? They came up with this tiny house idea where the NPC construction students could build a project to meet their requirements, and then when that project's over, those little tiny houses could be moved out to NATC to become basically little tiny apartments for these students to live. Okay, so you have a design project going on that will incorporate these little houses. SPS Plus, during some time in the history of NATC, was asked to come out to do a master plan of the whole facility and to also do the basic plan for the infrastructure for these little tiny houses. Okay, so you have that project going on. Plus, there's a desire to add on to the training facility itself to make some other corrections so that the training can be even better. So there's basically two things going on. They hired SPS Plus Architects to come up with the basic master plan and also the plan for the tiny houses as one project. That desire for that little project for the infrastructure went out for bid with the hopes that NATC might be able to fund the construction of that, not asking for any money from anybody else. The bids came back at $180,000, the lowest bid, for the infrastructure for the NATC program, or the tiny house infrastructure. NAT can't afford that. But the college goes out through Mark's help in that, for our state appropriation to see if we could get enough money to do the whole project, the whole master plan. Okay. Since NATC is trying to accommodate the police academy by January of 2020 to have a place for students to live, We went back and decided as a board to go back to SPS Plus Architects to see what it would cost to upgrade the existing master plan to meet the upcoming needs of not only the tiny house development, but also what is it going to take to facilitate the addition onto the dirty classroom facility to for, you know, that addition as well. And when we looked, when especially me, when I went and looked at it, we found out that we're going to have to redo a sewer line, we're going to have to redo an electrical service, so why do it twice? Let's go back to the architect and let's let them come up with a revised cost to revise the original design so that we don't do, you know, we don't have to do things three or four times to make it all work. So the revised cost from the architect was to take the tiny house infrastructure plan, make the corrections for some sewer, water, and electrical lines and communication for that area, to move them out of the way so that when we do go back for the funding to add on to the dirty classroom building, that infrastructure has been moved so that we don't have to tear it out and do it again. Okay, so we need to pay for some services from the architect to redesign those things. And it, and like I said before, maybe Mr. Madison can help me out, it's cheaper to go back to the original designer to have them modify their design than to give all of that information to somebody else and have them give you a price to recreate the wheel. So what we're asking in that $250,000 would be up to $26,000 to rehire the original architect to upgrade the original plans and to let us know as a board that you as a board are willing to set aside or encumber enough money to cover the construction costs. After we get the design redone, we're going to go out for bid to do the tiny house infrastructure. When we receive those bids, we're going to come back to the board, present, you know, the bids to the board and say, this is our recommendation to go with contractor A, B, or C, and request the rest of the $250,000 for the construction, or for the construction of the tiny house infrastructure.
On the picture, which way is north?
Turn it this way.
That's north. This is the overrun right here. And here's this one right here is the.
So you have in that picture, right here, this is the shooting range, the gun range, the pistol range, and the rifle range.
I can't see that far.
The long gray rectangle.
This right here is
it looks like it's got
okay.
Shooting range. This part right here is what they call the existing dirty classroom because when they go in there, they get dirty. The firefighters and stuff are dirty. And then this would be the future extension onto the dirty classroom, which would take everything out front, move it back here, and then that building out front would go away because, you know, it moves up and down with the seats. So the plan that we've asked for is to build this infrastructure right here, the concrete pads and the sidewalks, the plumbing and the electrical, to feed these little tiny houses, they call them, which become the living quarters for the police cadets. So our construction school at NPC will build those little tiny houses. We're asking that a contractor would come in and build the concrete pads and the infrastructure. When the little tiny houses are done, they'll be brought with a truck and they'll actually be set on those concrete pads and anchored to them, and then the utilities will be put to them. So all we're asking for now is one part of that is to redesign this so that we can get all the utilities out of the way of this addition, this part, so we don't do it again, and then to build this, then construction money to actually build this infrastructure.
What about money to build the little house?
That is an instructional fund through NPC.
Those are costs that we incur just as part of meeting the course outcomes for the program.
Correct, but I'm sure she wanted to know.
And Mr. Chairman, good job. Good job. The motion here, the action that we need to take is to hire STS Plus as the college, not as NATC, as the college, to prepare a set of bid documents for this work.
I think, well,
if you're going to bid it, you have to have the bidding documents.
What NATC is asking is to encumber those funds so that NATC can go out and hire STS Plus Architect to finish it.
Yeah, but then we... That doesn't make sense, because we're the ones who are paying for it. We're the ones who should actually pick who doesn't, even if we pick SPS, not in...
Well, that's fine with me. I thought that, Mark, I'm not...
Sure this thing is real mixed up.
How does the funding work? I don't know.
Well, do you mean the state appropriation?
Yes.
Well, the state appropriation is given to the district governing board.
Correct.
As a public entity, because you have can have oversight and control of public funds.
Correct. But I just don't feel comfortable saying, here's money, do with it what you will, without knowing what you will.
To simplify this, I would move that we retain STS to bring these documents up to bidding condition, and the estimate was what, 26,000?
Yeah, their estimate's around 26,000.
That NPC retain SPS to bring these documents up for bidding process. That's one motion, period.
As limited to $26,000.
With an upset of 26. Is that enough?
I have to check the exact number on the thing, but it's around 26.
That's a good number.
Okay.
I love that number. 26,525. Give or take.
And then what the board would like to see after that would be we would come back with a bid and you would award the amount of the bid,
Let's keep this thing simple.
I don't think that slows us down. I think that gives you all the control that you want over the money.
We have the money.
At least see where the money's going.
We have $25,000, right?
Dark Parker, you
know. Or $250,000.
We do have the $250,000.
Okay, but we don't have to commit that.
No.
Since
agreed.
We need to get a set of plans.
And if that's what the board would prefer to do it in those steps, that makes perfect sense.
And that slows nothing down.
Right.
You know, we're honest people. We'll work with you. We'll work with you. Okay, that's a motion.
So to be clear, your motion is to approve STS to update the existing plans for the NATC construction for an amount not to exceed $26,525?
That's my motion.
To be biddable for the plans. I have a motion, but I don't have a second yet. Second. Starting on my left, any discussion?
Aye.
Got it. Go ahead. Now you can vote.
Aye.
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 Motion carries. One last question. How soon do you think they can get us the plan so it can go out to bid?
They told me 4 to 6 weeks.
Thank you.
So maybe as early as anything.
Sorry for all the stuff, though.
No.
Confusing.
This relationship is going to be confusing since the very first day.
No, tell me about
it. It continues.
In that case, do I have a motion to go into executive session so everybody else can go to the bathroom?
Yeah. Are we going to come back then and finish all this other stuff?
Yes.
Okay. All right. You have a motion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to go into executive session. Any discussion? Hearing none?
Aye.
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 Aye. We're in executive sessions. Why don't you guys go out and smoke them if you got them?
Chair, I'd be like to be one of those people who would go to the restroom.
I mean, in that case, we'll resume after everybody makes it back.
Well, that? No, that was the other one. That was G.
This was Paul and mine, better safe than sorry.
In case we had to do something, we
in
could
case
do
you
it.
Chose to do something.
Does that mean we don't have to buy you a 911?
What?
A car.
I'm reading a book on gaming, by the way.
You said you were a gamer?
I am.
I didn't realize what a gamer was.
Strategy games and things like that?
Oh, my God. There's one particular game that is called The Whispering Man. The Whispering Man. Have you ever heard of that one?
No, I used to play diplomacy a lot. And there's a group of kind of ex-State Department and CIA guys who go around the country and run something called the National Strategic Decision-Making Game. They basically say, Cuban Missile Crisis, you're Kennedy, you're Khrushchev, here's all the information. And then they manage.
Okay. We're all back, whoever wants to be here. Now we're on 7H, and my understanding is we're going to no action. So, we go to standing business. It's all yours.
And the two VPs are not here. But we do have the co-chairs of SPACY, Colleen Riegel and Dr. Kevin Jones, for the Strategic Planning and Accreditation Steering Committee report.
And we're sorry it took so long.
We're going to sing the joy as you went from Faust.
And I didn't either like Faust, but no.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, it is an honor to be here. This is my first time presenting before the board, and I'm starting my fourth year. This is the I've taught at many universities. This is the best academic university, best academic institution I have ever been in. And I can attribute it to one simple thing. Everyone is focused on what's best for the students. And then that happens when things fall into place. Thank you for what you do for NPC. With that, now you all have copies or have copies available to you of the annual report, correct? Are there any questions on that?
Doesn't look like it.
Okay. That is good. Let me give you a couple of little quick updates to kind of bring you up to what we're doing presently. And kind of the next steps, and they've been approved by the SPACY. As a rule, SPACY takes on two or three larger priorities per year. And it seems like President Best put it succinctly, we're getting priority creeped. We're starting to get more things piling up and less things going out, fewer things going out than we would prefer. So for this year, we're putting those on hold, especially with the accreditation going through, so we can get them out of the way. A couple of examples, and they were in the paper, is we talking about putting child care facilities perhaps in some of the campuses or centers to help students out that way. That started a while back. We still haven't said, yes, it's good, are we going to keep going or not, or because we've had other pressing issues. So things like that we want to kind of get wrapped up so we can have a good start to a new year. This year, we'll avoid taking out the new priorities. And to improve the efficacy of the SPACY committee, decided we'd perhaps try some new things. In particular, that when we get a new SPACY member, they're thrown into an environment where all the new acronyms and the ideas and what's been going on, they don't really have a history of what there is. So it takes a while to come up to speed. I know when I first came to campus, well, we're going to hold that meeting at the SCC. Well, where's the SCC? Well, that's the Silver Creek campus. Well, where is that? That's the Snowflake campus. Why do we have three names for everything? So it took me a good semester and a half to where I could, yes, I know what the PEC is now. So, but with that, we thought we'd have sort of a boot camp for lack of better terms, that first meeting of the academic year, where it's focused on helping bring the new people up to speed, the introductions, the discussions, the identifications, and along with that, putting together a manual, you know, literally a, you know, here it is, so you can look things up, what's where, who's doing what are these particular committees, and all that. I'm on this committee, and all of them have acronyms. It reminds me about the days back in the military where everything had an acronym. Along with that, we thought we would assign mentors to the new members of SPACY. So they had actually somebody they could go to. So you didn't feel like, am I imposing on your time to, you know, try and pull you aside and have me explain something to you? No, that would actually be a position. I wish I'd have had that in about every committee that I've been a part of. This year, of course, one of the big priorities is to get through the accreditation and get through our HLC visit. I started calling it HCL for hydrochloric acid. You know, it's burning through my brain. Does anybody know Morse code?
That's a cell phone.
Oh, that was a cell phone. Okay. I thought they were trying to send us a message.
Actually,
you know, the planes
Morse code
are coming
and it was about a
Anyway, that's pretty much what I've got here. We're going along well. People are getting along well. We were, this last summer, we had some turnover in membership, and summer's a hard time to fill positions, so we went a couple of months before we actually had a quorum so we could vote things in. So our last meeting, we had to go through a nice laundry list of things and have it approved, but we're back up to speed and running strong. We've got good committees. We've got good people.
You covered it. Good job.
Questions for us? Actually, questions for Colleen. She knows way more than I do. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In the interest of time, I'll keep the President's report very short. As you know, there is the Arizona Association of District Governing Board Members Conference coming up in Prescott. You chose not to attend, that's fine. Just so you know, Central Arizona is also not sending any representation. The other districts are sending somewhere between one member and all of the members. We do have a president's meeting scheduled, so I'll be going over on Friday for that president's meeting. We are going to focus there on starting work on a legislative agenda, especially on expenditure limit for the upcoming year. I have asked our lobbyists, Michael Rossi, to work with Kristen Bellini, the system lobbyist, so that we are not having this conversation in December like I felt happened last year. We need to be ready to go with our legislative platform now, especially given that there may be a number of efforts to change education funding and to change education policy in the state over the next couple of years. And I'll keep it at that so that you can move along.
Okay. Items that anybody needs or information that board members need for our next meeting. Everybody looks sort of
hungry and tired.
So we'll go. Anybody have any summaries of current events in their areas? I guess I still get that hungry look. Next meeting is September 17th.
When are we having our retreat?
It was scheduled sometime late September.
September 30th is the day we're looking at.
Pardon?
September 30th.
But also a reminder, the day of September 17th, there will be a training session later that afternoon.
For us?
For the board.
That's the board request to train for the trust.
Gotcha.
So we will incorporate that into the retreat time.
It will be on the 17th. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. We're incorporating that into the regular meeting.
Okay.
It will follow the regular meeting.
Yes.
So you're bringing us lunch?
Yes.
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 And bottled water.
That's what it is.
It is training from the Ruth.
The person who's going to be doing the training is Dr. Ruth Lesper, who is a former chancellor of Maricopa and now with South Urban League.
League for Innovation.
League for Innovation.
If that's that, anybody have any motion?
I would move for adjournment, Mr. Chair.
Second. Discussion. Vote starting on my left.
Aye.
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 Motion carries. We're adjourned.
I think the motions for adjournment were not debatable.
Everything's debatable.
I said discussion. Tom, do you want this button?
I will take them, but you're welcome to hold on to them.
Okay.
I'll remember.